Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Speaking of Everything. Almost half of Republicans say they want a war with North Korea and support a first strike. Apparently, insanity actually is contagious. Don't drive through Washington, D.C. There's a big debate on Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. The argument is whether he called President Trump a moron or an effing moron, without cleaning up that word. An old friend of mine and I used to refer to a guy we knew as an FM. Same thing. Speaking of FMs, is the phrase President Trump an oxymoron? Larry Flint, creator of Hustler magazine, is offering $10 million for information leading to Trump's impeachment. What a cheap bastard. That's worth a lot more than $10 million. A Whataburger employee was fired after refusing to serve two police officers, saying to them that police had beat up her boyfriend and were racist. The police later said that there was no evidence that police beat up her boyfriend. On the other hand, in Austria's parliamentary elections, a right-wing anti-immigrant party received more votes than any other party, but not a majority. So it's likely to form a governing coalition with a party that's even more right-wing and has members that used to be Nazis. In case you don't know or remember it, Austria was the country which was the birthplace of a reasonably famous right-winger named Adolf. That would be Adolf Hitler. The good news is that a spokesperson for the victorious party said they would never, ever do anything that's anti-Semitic. Now I'm feeling all warm and fuzzy. A new condom is now being manufactured to cater to men who complain that the normal condom is too small for them. The normal condom is a bit over 6.5 inches, but it also stretches to substantially larger sizes. The new product comes in 10 different lengths and a variety of circumferences. The largest sizes, of course, are selling out rapidly because it lets some idiots show off the package to show that their package needs this product. Is it possible that one of these new larger sizes will fit over the president's head? I'm just saying. Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, welcome to Speaking of Everything with Jeff Bushman. That is I, c'est moi. Tonight we'll talk about these stories a little bit and the major constitutional question. What happens when it's revealed that the Russians hacked voting machines in some critical states and changed the election results? And you can participate as well if you're so inclined, and more to the point, if anyone's listening. The number to call in if you wish to join the conversation is area code 646-668-2953. There are too many sixes in there with my sibilant S's, but there you have it. 646-668-2953. For the next 26 and a half minutes or so, we'll be speaking of everything, but specifically about those news stories and the question about voting machines, which we'll get to in just a minute. In the meantime, however, let me introduce myself to those of you who haven't listened to me before and happen to have run across this podcast. My name is Jeff Bushman, and if you are interested in reading some of the things that I've written, you can go to Amazon.com and look up Jeff Bushman. You will find there that that I have three books up there. One is a collection of the columns I used to write for a local magazine on the subject of, well, sex. Another one's a mystery novel called Bobby's Been Shot. And the third one is called The Mobile Millionaire, that's the one which frankly sells the most. It's a book about mobile home investing and also how to do that on the cheap. So if you're interested in any of that, again, you can go directly to Mobile Millionaire, and after you've looked at that, you can click on the author, which is me, and see the other things I've written, or you can just go look up Jeff Bushman at Amazon.com, or if you want my full name, it would be Jefferson Bushman. Anyway, welcome. The title of our program, which I have used before, is nonetheless a theft, not from myself, but from Howard Cosell, whose voice I can't imitate particularly well, so I won't, but for a number of years, he had a radio show and briefly a television show called Speaking of Everything, which was his way of getting away from his image as a sportscaster or sports reporter or commentator only. And he really did talk about almost everything. And in this program, in the future, we hope to have guests and probably an expanded time frame that is more than 30 minutes. We are experimenting tonight, among other things, with determining sound quality. And after listening to this broadcast or podcast, I'll be able to tell at a later time whether we have to make some changes, and I expect we will. Talking about the story, oh, and again, the phone number to call in if you're so inclined, 646-668-2953. If you're not inclined to call, it's the same number anyway. somehow, about 46% of Republicans say they are ready for and want a war with North Korea and support us doing a first strike. Interesting, but the people who know this stuff better than I do and respectfully probably better than you do say that we would, not we, but that there would be about 10 million deaths if we went to war with North Korea. For some reason, we seem to be on hold. I don't know why that is. Hold on one second here. Oh, I see. Someone's calling in from Georgia, I assume. Let's see if I can get them in. Hello, Georgia. How are you?
I'm all right. How you doing, man?
I'm okay. Good, good, good. You are calling from the Atlanta area, right?
That is correct.
See, I recognize area codes. I'm Jeff. What's your first name?
Nas.
Nas. Okay, Nas, talk to me.
Well, I'm just getting in, so I got to catch up where you are. There's always a million stories moving nowadays, so I got to know which one you're on to right now.
You've got to know which one I'm doing what? I'm sorry, it was hard to hear you.
Oh, really? Maybe I need to move. No, I didn't know which story you were on right now.
Which story? I was just talking about Republicans wanting to go to war in Korea. Almost half of the Republicans say they want a war with North Korea. But you can talk about the other stories I mentioned at the lead, or you can talk about something else if you wish.
Well, no, we can do North Korea. Yeah, no, North Korea is... You know, it would be funny if there weren't real lives in the balance, but
yeah,
the ridiculousness of the average American not knowing foreign policy or wanting to know foreign policy. So we just do the good, bad narrative instead of, you know, looking into it. And you realize the Democratic Republic of Korea, as they prefer to be called, I believe
mm-hmm.
it is.
I think it's the People's Democratic Republic of Korea. Yeah,
there we go. I got to add the peoples in there.
That's right.
People, they want the sanctions lifted and be able to act in a way that's not restricted. We don't want to remove those sanctions, and normally the president or the administration aid and some type of giveaway to them, and they kind of come
right.
to peaceful terms of not continuing the new process and everything else. This president came in with an adversarial idea of having this you know, fight with this guy. And it's ridiculous because you got a world power on the world stage fighting against a second-rate country in
mm-hmm.
a strategic war that actually wins you nothing. China will protect them no matter what because they're right on their border. They don't want, you know, refugees coming over to China. And also they don't want another Western-influenced nation because South Korea is right there in their sphere of influence. So the idea that we would pursue this is ridiculous, and that's why people in the past have not pursued this. But
yeah, I can't disagree with what you said.
Fight.
Yeah, the other thing is, I don't know if you've had an opportunity to study the Korean War of the 1950s.
Yeah,
but,
man.
Okay, well, as you know, but let me mention to people who may not, because they're younger than you and I are, and I expect you're younger than I am. But anyway, in the 1950s, the Korean War was going fairly smoothly until we started approaching, until General MacArthur started approaching the border between North Korea and China. And at that point, China came across the river, the Yalu River, and joined the fight. And it was after that that the war became much, much more difficult for the so-called United
police
Nations.
Police action. We have to term it,
yeah,
right?
Right?
Police action, remember? They couldn't call it a war.
Exactly. That's right, but we know what it was. Anyway, police action is when the police shoot someone who's unarmed, who's African-American. we didn't do that
there
in Korea. Yeah, but no, but seriously, so that's what occurred. And when China crossed the Yalu, the war changed. I'm sorry, the police action changed characteristics, and it was much harder. And that's why ultimately it was no better than a draw. So that's pretty much where that is. Anyway, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, we also have to add the context of the bombing was so severe. Like, you could read what MacArthur had to say about it and what other people said about it. It's kind of scary, scary stuff when you actually read about the bombing there. Then you realize why there's such a militarized country that has this one idea of the U.S. is always coming to get them, and why if you're a ruler there, that's an easy tactic to play on. That's an easy way to get people in line. It's an authoritarian's dream. So you got that dynamic going on, so everybody understood, okay, this is a hornet's nest. Why hit it? Just go ahead and send the aid. You'll buzz them a little bit, sending, bombers over every once in a while, things are contentious, but you won't push it past that. But this guy
I don't know if that's the answer, but I have a strong feeling that going to war on the Korean Peninsula is not the answer either. One thing you've got to say, I hate to say anything positive about Trump, but one thing you've got to say positively for Trump is, even though he's coming up with the wrong solutions, he's at least looking at it with a slightly different perspective, which probably we need, because nothing else has really worked in terms of denuclearizing North Korea.
Yeah, but I think we got to – okay, let's say if you're traveling down the wrong path, it doesn't matter what solution you're coming to because you're going down the wrong path. If you essentially have certain agreements with China as far as respecting another world power, this is just a non-starter. Like, there's nothing good that can come out of this except Vladimir Putin being able to go to South Korea and go to Japan and say, look, your ally's causing friction for you. He's causing a problem.
Yep.
Maybe you need to talk to me. Like, There's no good way out of this. So that's why I think it's just strategically bad. And, most people, I think, would agree.
There may be some tactical advantage, but you're absolutely right, in my opinion, that the strategy is extraordinarily flawed, which is no surprise. I'm going to move along now, Naz, but call me back. I'm going to try to be doing this every week.
No, okay. Do your thing, man.
All right. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Okay, returning to this, and if you want to call in and participate as Naz did, the call-in number is 646-668-2953. Because of the shortage of time, let me get to our main subject, and then if we have time, we'll come back to some of these other stories. Here's what's going on. Let me explain briefly. Everybody knows, except for Donald Trump, that the Russians hacked our election by hacking the DNC email. And, by the way, one of the things they did by hacking the DNC email is they raised the subject of email in the minds of voters. Even though it had nothing or very little to do with Hillary Clinton, they had it drummed into their heads so long and so often that Hillary Clinton had done something terrible with email, that when the subject of the DNC or John Podesta's email being hacked, it reminded people of Hillary Clinton's email, and that association probably cost her some votes or gained Trump some votes. But here's where the real issue is. The voting machines in various states, some of them are hooked up to the Internet. Many of them are hooked up to the Internet. Some are not. But what the current reporting is, the current government version of the truth, is that, yes, the Russians hacked into these other things, and they put out propaganda on Facebook and on Twitter, and if not necessarily direct propaganda, at least things that would be divisive of and in the American public, and specifically the voting public, but that they can't identify that the Russians changed any votes. That's story one, and that's the current accepted truth. What's the expression? Conventional wisdom, okay? Except conventional wisdom is often conventional, but it's seldom wisdom. That's a whole other discussion. But what has occurred additionally is there have been groups of hackers, admitted hackers, American hackers, that have gotten together in these hackers conventions. And they were challenged. This has happened a couple of times. A couple of news stories have come out about this. They have put the voting machines in the next room and challenged the hackers who were present to go ahead and hack into the machines and change votes. It took these folks 20 minutes, and they could change votes. Now, the obvious conclusion one can reach from that is if these hobbyist hackers could do that, why couldn't the Russians, who were working in St. Petersburg, and I think it was called the Internet Research Institute, these were folks who were doing all of the other garbage we were just talking about. Why is it impossible to believe that these folks could hack into the voting machines and change votes, specifically in the states where the margin for Trump was not that large? I'm thinking Wisconsin, if I recall correctly, Michigan and Pennsylvania, and perhaps Florida, but I'm not sure of Florida. But with respect to at least those three states, if those three states had gone for Hillary Clinton, she would now be president. Okay, we all know that Hillary Clinton got something like 2.5 or 3 million more votes, more popular votes than Trump, but his votes were in the right places. Well, if you were trying to manipulate an election, why wouldn't you go ahead and manipulate those votes in the places where just a little bit of changing could make a difference? So let's say you have a state where Trump won by 3,000 votes. As you likely know if you're listening to this program, if you win a state by one vote, you get all their electoral college votes. There are a couple of exceptions in the country, but generally speaking, that's the case. You win by one vote, you get all of that state's electoral votes, and it's the electoral votes in the so-called electoral college that elect the president. Okay. And Trump got more electoral votes than Hillary Clinton. That's why he's president, even though he got fewer popular votes. Okay. So what you then have is if there's one state where he won by something like 3,000 votes. If you could change 6,000 votes, which is not that many as a percentage of the total vote in the state, if you could change 6,000 votes, you would turn that state from red to blue, from Trump to Clinton. Okay, many of you probably have the same recollection I do of the election night where we were watching TV or listening to radio and hearing the election results coming through and not being able to believe that Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Florida were all going for Trump. They weren't all going by, in fact, most of them were not going by large numbers, but they were going for Trump. Those states made all the difference. So, and I may have one of those states wrong, admittedly. So that's the situation. Now, here's the real question. What happens? And this is what the headline was on the episode tonight. By the way, we're planning on doing this show next Thursday night live as well. You can join us live Thursday nights. At least this is the plan. Life interferes sometimes. Thursday nights, talking about Pacific time from 6 p.m. I'm sorry, scratch that. From 9 p.m. to 9:30 p.m., which would be midnight in the east, and you can figure it out for yourself in terms of the other time zones, as I'm sure you're used to doing. So if you're listening to this in the downloaded podcast version, we'll be live on Thursday evening, or if you're on the East Coast, really late Thursday night. So in any event, what happens when the conventional wisdom is turned on its head and it's discovered, if it's discovered, I'm not saying it will be, but my guess is that it will be, that it's discovered or revealed that may be revealed that it's the Russians or it may not, someone changed the votes in the voting machines in those states. And were it not for that, Hillary Clinton would have won the Electoral College and therefore the election and be president. What happens? And before you answer, you have to realize nobody knows the answer. Anybody who thinks he knows the answer or she knows the answer is wrong, because there is nothing in our Constitution which calls for the rerunning of an election. Nothing. There are several other scenarios, by the way, that we could all come up with about people, you know, a candidate who is elected dying between election and inauguration and what happens then. And there are all kinds of things we could talk about with the 25th Amendment, where the cabinet comes to the realization that the guy really is nuts and try to utilize the 25th Amendment. But other than those things, just something we've got right now, if it is revealed before, assuming Trump serves out his whole term, which is an open question anyway, if he were to serve out his whole term and the last 6 months or 3 months, it's revealed that the election was changed by hacking, obviously, well, maybe not obviously, but we can't rerun the election. If it were revealed today, we can't rerun the election. The difference is, if it were revealed today, we would have what's called a constitutional crisis, because there is nothing in the Constitution, as said, there's nothing in the Constitution that provides for the rerunning of the election or recounting the votes or somehow ameliorating the obvious hacking that was done that changed the election, if in fact that were revealed and that's obvious. So if tomorrow it's found out that those three or four states had their votes changed by a sufficient difference to throw the election to Hillary Clinton, Hillary Clinton doesn't become president. We don't have anything for that. There is no remedy for this. Now, one can envision that Hillary Clinton or someone on her behalf sues the United States government or sues Donald Trump or somebody to get the courts to implement the results of the election if they are different. But there's nothing that's provided for in law or in the Constitution. And if you think there is, call me and tell me what it is, please. We have about 8 minutes left on the show, or you can call next week and let me know. Again, that call in number 646-668-2953. But that's a thorny problem. There is, as I say, there is no obvious remedy. So there you are. That said, there will be some information revealed in the next year or so from the Mueller investigation of Trump and possible collusion with Russia. Now, collusion is not a crime. Let's acknowledge that. Collusion is not a crime. Conspiracy to commit a crime is itself a crime. As a matter of fact, conspiracy to commit a misdemeanor, which is a lesser crime for those who don't know or who haven't been watching any old episodes of L.A. Law, a misdemeanor is a crime that generally, depending on your state, is punishable by a year, no more than a year in prison, no more than $1,000 in fines, or both. And a felony is something which is punishable by greater punishment than that. Some states have different fine limits or different time limits, but that's generally, in the states I'm aware of, that's the difference between a misdemeanor and a felony. And conspiracy to commit a misdemeanor is a felony itself. So there you are. But whatever the crimes are, if any, that Trump and his people committed, if they can demonstrate that they conspired with Russia, even if the crime they committed would be a misdemeanor, that is itself a felony. When what the Constitution does say about impeachment of the president or vice president is, if the Congress determines that the president, let's assume we're just talking about the president, has committed high crimes or misdemeanors, or high crimes and misdemeanors, it is grounds for impeachment. And some scholar has said, what is a high crime? As far as impeachment is concerned, that scholar has said whatever Congress says it is. More correctly, it's whatever the House says it is. So that's what you're looking at. So if impeachment were to occur, and assuming further the vice president were not also impeached, and that's not clear, by the way. It appears that Mike Pence was also involved with the Russians, but again, that's not proven yet. But if that comes to be revealed, and Trump's involvement comes to be revealed, and, well, first off, if both of them are impeached, I suppose it's a trivia question, who becomes president after the president and vice president? Many people know the answer to that, and that is it's the Speaker of the House. Currently, that means it would be Paul Ryan. Question, which is more difficult, is who becomes president after the Speaker of the House. If the president, vice president, and Speaker of the House were all unable to fulfill the duties of the presidency, who would become president? I'll come back to that in a minute if I remember. Anyway, there's an article in the current New Yorker, which I haven't read yet, but which is being talked about on all of the liberal talk shows, at least, talking about the fact that Mike Pence would not be a panacea. It might not even be a pan of spaghetti, but specifically, he would be terrible for those who already dislike Trump, because Pence is much more doctrinaire, much more conservative, and would and is smart enough to know how to get his policies implemented, unlike the current holder of the office. So just getting rid of Trump by way of either impeachment or the use of the 25th Amendment is not something that should be undertaken lightly, because then Pence would be president. The ideal would be to have that happen toward the end of the first term, because then Pence couldn't really mount much of a reelection campaign. But that's a different subject for a different day, or a different week, whatever. But that's what he's looking at. But the fact is, Trump, it will be revealed, I highly suspect, as do many other people, did in fact conspire with the Russians, although he may not have made his, he may not have left his fingerprints on the crime, but that Trump did conspire with the Russians to affect the election. Whether my earlier supposition is correct, that they hacked voting machines and changed the election, and whether Trump knew about that is something I don't know about. Obviously, nobody knows except for the people who are involved. But don't be surprised if that's what ends up getting revealed. Who knows? In any event, which is a phrase I use too much, I mentioned that Larry Flint, who created Hustler magazine, he's offered rewards before for various other things, and now he's offering $10 million for information that leads to Trump's impeachment. So if you have that information, Larry Flint is the guy to contact to claim your reward. I wonder if Bob Mueller is eligible for that. Time will tell, right? Parliamentary systems. We only have a few minutes left. Parliamentary systems are interesting. I mentioned in the lead that Austria just had an election, and an anti-immigrant right-wing government won the greatest number of votes, not a majority, the greatest number of votes. Most Americans have little clue about how parliamentary systems work, and in 2 minutes or so, I don't have time to explain it all. Not that I'm an expert, but I have a fairly good understanding of parliaments. What happens basically in those countries that have parliamentary systems is parties run, and individual members of parliament run in their districts. And once they're elected, the party that has the greatest number of – well, first off, if a party gets a majority, they get to choose the leader of their party, and she or he becomes prime minister. If they don't have a majority, excuse me, they attempt to get with other parties to form a coalition that can govern. And usually it's with a party that agrees with them, but not always. In Israel, one of the problems is that Likud, which is already fairly conservative, actually very conservative, never gets a majority, but they get the most number of votes. Then they have to make deals with the farther right-wing religious parties to govern. And in order to get them to go along with forming a coalition, they have to give them things like, for example, nobody who is Orthodox has to serve in the military, for example. And I don't even know if that's true, but I think it is. And in Austria, the winning party is likely going to form a coalition with the party that, as I mentioned, is the larger, is a further right wing. We have a minute and a half, so this will be an opportunity to invite you to join us next week, Thursday, at midnight Eastern, 9 o'clock Pacific, right here at blogtalkradio.com, and hopefully by then I may be able to tell you some other outlets. So please join us next week for Speaking of Everything with Jeff Bushman. Thanks very much, and good night.